This episode of the Ortho Bullets podcast will go over the topic of normal bone metabolism from the basic science section on orthobullets.com. Normal bone metabolism is the complex sequence of bone turnover or osteoclastogenesis and bone formation or osteoblastogenesis. Now, let's quickly talk about the physiology of bone metabolism, regulators of bone metabolism, and the properties of bone metabolism. As far as the physiology of bone metabolism, bone has structural and metabolic functions. Metabolic functions of bone largely involve the homeostasis of calcium and phosphate. Release of calcium or absorption of calcium by bone is largely regulated by hormones and less so by steroids. As far as the regulators of bone metabolism, the ones to know are hormones and steroids. Specific hormones include PTH, calcitonin, sex hormones, for example, estrogen and androgens, growth hormone, and thyroid hormones. Steroids that are regulators of bone metabolism include vitamin D and glucocorticosteroids. Moving on to properties of bone metabolism, the two important properties to talk about are bone mass and bone loss. Bone mass is the measure of bone tissue present at the end of skeletal maturity. This represents both its volume and size, as well as the density of the mineralized tissue. Peak bone mass occurs in the hip between ages 16 and 25. Bone mass is greater in men and in African Americans. As far as bone loss, keep in mind that bone mass decreases by 0.3 to 0.5% per year after skeletal maturity. There are further decreases by 2 to 3% per year for untreated women during the 6th to 10th years after menopause. Keep in mind that the rate of bone loss can be modulated by structural and metabolic factors. Now, let's talk about calcium in a bit more detail. As far as the location of calcium, 99% is found in the bone, 0.1% is found in the blood and extracellular fluid, and 1% is found intracellularly. As far as the function, calcium has a wide range of function, including muscle cell contraction, nerve conduction, and clotting mechanisms. As far as the forms of calcium, there are different forms in the bone and in the serum. In the bone, the majority of calcium is hydroxyapatite. In the serum, 45% of calcium ions are bound to protein, 45% are free ionized calcium, and 10% of calcium is bound to various anions, for example, citrate and bicarbonate. With respect to the regulation of calcium, absorption of calcium occurs from the digestive tract, resorption occurs from the bone, and resorption also occurs in the kidneys. As far as the dietary requirements of calcium, 20,000 milligrams per day is recommended for lactating women, 1,500 milligrams per day is recommended for pregnant women, postmenopausal women, and patients with a healing bone fracture. 1,300 milligrams per day is recommended for adolescents and young adults, 750 milligrams per day are recommended for adults, and 600 milligrams per day is recommended for children. As far as dysfunction of calcium, the two to know are hypercalcemia and hypocalcemia, which we'll discuss in more detail in other podcast episodes. Now, let's talk about phosphate in a bit more detail. As far as the location of phosphate, 86% of phosphate in the body is found in the bone, 0.08% is found in the blood and the extracellular fluid, and 14% is found intracellular. As far as the function of phosphate, it's a key component of bone mineral, and it's also important in enzyme systems and molecular interactions. As far as the forms of phosphate, in bone, the majority of phosphate is hydroxyapatite, and in the serum, phosphate is mostly inorganic phosphate. As far as regulation, plasma phosphate is mostly unbound and reabsorbed by the kidney, and it may be excreted in the urine. Elevated serum phosphate can lead to increased release of PTH and bone resorption. As far as dietary intake, 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams per day is recommended. Now, let's talk about parathyroid hormone in a bit more detail. The structure of PTH is an 84 amino acid peptide. As far as the origin, PTH is synthesized and secreted from the chief cells in the four parathyroid glands. Again, PTH is synthesized and secreted from the chief cells in the four parathyroid glands. With respect to the net effect of PTH, it increases serum calcium and decreases serum phosphate. As far as the mechanism of PTH in the bone, PTH stimulates osteoblasts to secrete IL-1, IL-6, and other cytokines to activate osteoclasts and increase the resorption of bone. PTH also increases osteoblast production of MCSF, which is macrophage colony stimulating factor, and RANK-L, which increases the number of osteoclasts. Paradoxically, osteoclasts do not express a receptor for PTH. As far as the mechanism of PTH on the kidney, it stimulates the enzymatic conversion of 25 vitamin D3 converted to 125 vitamin D3, which is the active hormone form of vitamin D, which increases resorption of calcium in the kidney, increasing the serum calcium, and it also increases excretion of phosphate from the kidney, which decreases the serum phosphate. As far as the mechanism of PTH on the intestine, there is no direct action. However, it indirectly increases calcium absorption by activating 125 vitamin D3. As far as dysfunction of PTH, PTH-related protein and its receptor have been implicated in metaphyseal dysplasia. Keep in mind that parathyroid hormone-related protein, or PTHRP, has related effects to PTH as it binds to the same receptors on osteoblasts and renal cells to increase serum calcium. Now, let's talk about calcitonin in a bit more detail. The structure of calcitonin is a 32 amino acid peptide hormone. As far as the origin, calcitonin is produced by clear cells in the parafollicles of the thyroid gland, also known as C cells. Again, calcitonin is produced by clear cells in the parafollicles of the thyroid gland, otherwise known as C cells. As far as the net effect of calcitonin, it has a limited role in calcium homeostasis, and it inhibits the number and activity of osteoclasts. As far as the function of calcitonin in bone, it inhibits osteoclastic bone resorption by decreasing the number and activity of osteoclasts. Keep in mind that osteoclasts have a receptor for calcitonin. So as far as the function of calcitonin, increased serum calcium causes the secretion of calcitonin, which inhibits osteoclasts and then decreases calcium transiently. As far as dysfunction of calcitonin, keep in mind that calcitonin is secreted by medullary thyroid tumors and multiple endocrine neoplasia type 2 tumors. Remember that recombinant calcitonin is used to treat Paget's disease, osteoporosis, and hypercalcemia in malignancy. Now, let's talk about vitamin D in a bit more detail. As far as the structure, vitamin D is a fat-soluble secosteroid, that is, a steroid with a broken ring. As far as the origin, vitamin D is produced by the skin when exposed to sunlight, that is, UVB-generated vitamin D. It can also be found in dietary intake, that is, specifically lipid-soluble vitamin D3. And finally, the active metabolite 125 vitamin D3 is formed by two hydroxylations in the liver and the kidney, respectively. As far as the net effect of vitamin D, it maintains normal serum calcium levels by activating osteoclasts for bone resorption and increasing intestinal absorption of calcium, and thereby increases serum calcium. Vitamin D also promotes the mineralization of osteoid matrix. As far as the function of vitamin D, it has different functions in the liver, kidney, and bone. In the liver, activated vitamin D3 is converted to 25 vitamin D3. In the kidney, 25 vitamin D3 is converted to 125 vitamin D3, which is the active hormone form. It's activated by increased levels of PTH and decreased levels of serum calcium and phosphate. 125 vitamin D3, again, which is the active hormone form, can be inactivated to 2425 vitamin D3, and inactivity occurs with decreased levels of PTH and increased levels of serum calcium and phosphate. Keep in mind that the function of vitamin D parallels that of PTH by increasing reabsorption of calcium in the kidneys. As far as the function of vitamin D in the bone, 125 vitamin D3 stimulates terminal differentiation of osteoclasts. When osteoclasts mature, they do not respond to 125 vitamin D3 and respond mostly to cytokines released by osteoblasts. 125 vitamin D3 promotes the mineralization of osteoid matrix produced by osteoblasts. Again, 125 vitamin D3 promotes the mineralization of osteoid matrix produced by osteoblasts. As far as dysfunction of vitamin D deficiency causes osteomalacia and rickets. Finally, remember that phenytoin or Dilantin causes impaired metabolism of vitamin D. Now let's talk about the hormone estrogen in a bit more detail. As far as the structure, estrogen is a D-ring steroid hormone. As far as the origin, estrogen is predominantly produced in the ovaries, however, synthetic forms are also available. As far as the net effect of estrogen, it prevents bone loss by decreasing the frequency of bone resorption and remodeling. As far as the function of estrogen leads to an increase in bone density of the femoral neck and reduces the risk of hip fracture. Keep in mind that estrogen is the most important sex steroid for peak bone mass attainment in both men and women. This has been a tested point on previous exams, so I'll say it again. Estrogen is the most important sex steroid for peak bone mass attainment in both men and women. As far as the outcomes of therapeutic estrogen, it decreases bone loss if started within 5 to 10 years after the onset of menopause. However, significant side effects and the risk-benefit ratio must be evaluated. Gains in bone mass from therapeutic estrogen is usually limited to an annual increase of 2 to 4% for the first 2 years of therapy. Some secondary effects of therapeutic estrogen to keep in mind is that it increases the risk of heart disease and breast cancer. However, it decreases the risk of hip fracture and endometrial cancer if combined with cyclic progestin. In laboratory studies in the setting of using therapeutic estrogen, you will see a decrease in urinary pyridylene and serum alkaline phosphatase. Again, in the setting of using therapeutic estrogen, you will see a decrease in urinary pyridylene and serum alkaline phosphatase. Now let's talk about thyroid hormone in a bit more detail. As far as the function, it regulates skeletal growth at the physis by stimulating chondrocyte growth, type 10 collagen synthesis, as well as alkaline phosphatase activity. Thyroid hormones increase bone resorption and can lead to osteoporosis. Large doses of therapeutic thyroxine can mimic this process and cause osteoporosis. Now let's talk about growth hormone in a bit more detail. As far as the function of growth hormone, it increases serum calcium by increased absorption in the intestine, as well as decreasing urinary excretion. The function of growth hormone is interdependent with insulin, somatomedins, and growth factors like TGF-beta, PDGF, and mono/lifokines. Gigantism is an oversecretion or increased response to growth hormone affecting the proliferative zone of the growth plate. This has been a tested point on previous exams, so I'll say it again. Gigantism is the oversecretion or increased response to growth hormone affecting the proliferative zone of the growth plate. Finally, just to touch on steroids in a bit more detail, the function of steroids is to increase bone loss by decreasing calcium absorption in the intestine through a decrease in binding proteins. Steroids also function to decrease bone formation, specifically cancellous bone more so than cortical bone, by decreasing collagen synthesis and inhibiting osteoblast activity. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, which of the following represents a disease process that is caused by oversecretion of hormone that preferentially affects the proliferative zone of the growth plate? And the choices are 1, spondyloepiphyseal dysplasia, 2, gigantism, 3, diastrophic dysplasia, 4, cleidocranial dysplasia, and 5, multiple epiphyseal dysplasia. The correct answer to this question is 2, gigantism. So gigantism is an oversecretion of growth hormone. Keep in mind that longitudinal bone growth occurs at the growth plate by a process called endochondral ossification, in which cartilage is first formed and then remodeled into bone tissue. The growth plate consists of three principal layers: the resting zone, the proliferative zone, and the hypertrophic zone. Growth hormone acts preferentially at the proliferative zone when it stimulates longitudinal growth. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, spondyloepiphyseal dysplasia is where there is disproportionate dwarfism, spinal involvement, and a barrel chest from a collagen 2A1 mutation. dystrophic dysplasia with a, quote, hitchhiker's thumb, cauliflower ear, cleft palate, and short limb dwarfism is due to a sulfate transport mutation. Cladocranial dysplasia is due to a defect in core binding factor alpha 1 or CBFA1 causing dwarfism and absent clavicles. And multiple epiphyseal dysplasia causes disproportionate dwarfism with multiple epiphyses involved, shortened metacarpals, valgus knees, but no spinal involvement, all of which are due to a COMP mutation. And moving on to the final question, peak bone mass attainment in both men and women is most dependent on which sex steroid. And the choices are 1, testosterone, 2, progesterone, 3, growth hormone, 4, estrogen, and 5, cortisol. The correct answer to this question is 4, estrogen. So estrogen has been shown to be important for both men and women in attaining peak bone mass. Risk factors for osteoporosis are increasing age, female sex, early menopause, fair-skinned, family history of hip fracture, low body weight, smoking, glucocorticoid use, excessive alcohol, low protein intake, and anticonvulsant or antidepressant use. That's all for this review about normal bone metabolism. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.